guys, you're here with Honey Hands.
And yes, yes.
And you're back at it again with another quintessentially Somali episode. On this episode, we have a special guest. I'm screaming. Do you want to introduce yourself, Anna?
Hi, you just introduced me.
Your last name, anything.
Hi, my name is Hannah Addo, and I'm so happy to be on here.
Well, guys, it was so crazy, like, you know how on our last episode we were talking about Cambridge and, like, everything that we did? I don't know if we mentioned that girl, the one that shall not be named. What was her name?
She had the same name as me. She had the same name as me.
Oh, you're not. So, yeah, because of that, and she, like, because she didn't get back to us, we thought, like, our chances of, like, talking to somebody that went to Cambridge was, you know, dead. But yeah, like, Hannah pulled through, and then, alhamdulillah, like, she got back to us quickly, and then we scheduled it just like that. Like, it was so effortless. Yeah. So, as always, like, we always start off with, you know, what we've been up to this month. I don't even know, like, December just went by, like, in a blink of an eye. I don't even remember what was going on. It just started out so soon. So I think for me, the most memorable thing would be, Boxing Day. Like, a lot of stuff happened on Boxing Day. Partly because I was organised. I basically copped a lot of things. I broke the bank, guys.
I love that.
I broke the bank. If you guys want a haul, I'll do it. Because I'm not going out January. You will not see me. I'm not spending nothing. So what about you, sis?
You know what has been my highlight for December? You're right, it actually flew by. I can't believe we're on the 27th. I'm scared. I'm scared for my life. I am. No, you know the highlight? Two things was the highlight. Watching Spider-Man. Oh my God. Guys, I'm a Tom Deya fan. Period. I'm in their relationship too. I'm the child. No, I'm joking. I'm obsessed. Like, I just loved it. And honestly, I'm an Avenger fan. I'm not going to lie to you. Like, I've been an Avenger fan. So, like, watching that, it was just amazing. I'm not going to lie to you. Have you guys watched it?
No, yeah.
Sis, watch
I
it.
Have.
You have?
Sis, I have.
I just don't. I can't get into Marvel, guys.
What do you mean?
I don't know what's going on.
You know what? Start with Iron Man. Start with Iron Man. He's a really good one to start with.
I just go for the CGI. Okay. Yeah. It's just so fun to watch. Yeah. I don't even know what's going on.
Okay, the last Marvel film I watched was Shang-Chi. It was
that's a good one. Yeah,
quite recent. 10 out of 10.
Really?
I love that film so much.
It was really
Definitely one of the best films.
But yeah, going back to it, just Spider-Man. It was really good watching it. I've been obsessed as a kid, but I think it was just the atmosphere in the, like, I don't want to say movie theater, but in the cinema. Like, I've never in my life seen people, like, clap, scream, you know, nearly cry. And I know everyone's crying because there was a moment where everyone was just dead silent. And so a few people sniffled. I'm pretty sure a man must have cried because
it was emotional.
It was a roller coaster. It was, like, a really good one. One of the best, like, cinema experiences I've had thus far.
Yeah, I agree.
So I think that was probably my favourite. Yeah. And also going ice skating. It just felt like the epitome of Christmas. Oh. Like, it was really nice, the Christmas lights. Yeah.
Can you ice skate? I mean, but yeah.
I can, but I only fell once. And guys, my jeans was wet. It was, like, but it was a really good experience. It's good to get over your fear. Because I'm not scared of heights, but I'm scared of falling. And, like, I'm scared of, like, being hurt. Like you know, being vulnerable and breaking bones. But alhamdulillah, like, I had a fun time. Yeah. So that was probably my highlight. That's what about so you?
When you're speaking of ice skating, I literally remember that I went ice skating at the Natural History Museum.
Yeah.
To know that I was on ice skating, yeah.
Yeah.
Because, like, I was watching, do you know that Tonya movie, I, Tonya, which is, like, a bigger skater.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know, when you watch something, can you think it becomes a new obsession? So I literally went ice skating there, and then I went to the Adipali ice skating.
Yeah.
And, like, I was so tempted to, like, pay for lessons and, like, just be a really good ice skater.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree with you. It just felt so Christmassy. Ice skating outside and all the central London Christmas lights. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. Aww. I love it so much.
Highlights.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Mm-hmm. You know, like, going back to Marvel, I'm still confused because I remember watching, you know, the old Spider-Man, so the
OG one.
The OG ones, and there must have been, like, two Spider-Mans.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like they don't get the acclaim that the most recent guy has.
100%.
Yeah.
I think they all served their purpose, though, because, you know, we were kids when the first one came out. I was 3. It came out 2002, end of 2002.
What, Toby one?
Toby's one. His came out in 2002. That's so crazy. I rewatched it recently, and I was looking at they didn't even have CGI. I think they were doing stunts in real time. And it was giving me, like, I don't know, obviously the camera they used was like like advanced then, but looking back now I was like, oh my gosh, this is awful, because we're used to like HD quality and the CGI. But I think my favorite Spider-Man was Andrew Garfield. Chef's kiss.
Have you watched Tick Tick Boom?
No, I haven't. That was on my list. And you know what? Because Spider-Man came out, it overshadowed Tick Tick Boom. Yeah.
I feel bad for him. In all of his Tick Tick Boom interviews, they're also about the Spider-Man
movie. Yeah. That's so sad.
It is really sad.
Yeah. Like, did you not expect this though? Like, if you release a film and then, like, you're linked to it in one way or another.
Yeah. Like, he's a typecast, essentially. I'm not going to lie to you, which is quite sad.
He is. No, because when you say Andrew Garfield, I think of The Social Network.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, yeah. Okay. And you know that monologue where he was like, I'm sorry that my shirt is in the, in the laundromat and I'm wearing my fucking flip-flops.
I remember that scene.
That part, iconic.
I only watched it for him, I'm not going to lie to you. I didn't watch it for the Jesse guy. I watched it for Jamin. Andrew.
Yeah, but what that Jesse guy ate, like, come on. No crumbs. Give me the plate. No crumbs. Like, he, he's acting of, what's it, Mark Zuckerberg to a T.
It was. Big shout out to Andrew Garfield. Not
that he's literally, like, white boy of the year now.
Is he, though?
Yeah, he is. Yes, he is. Okay. He's so popular.
Really?
So popular.
But not back then, though. I hate how he's getting his accolades now. And it's like, where were you when he needed you?
What other white boy of the month can you guys think of?
Tom Holland.
Really? Tom Holland. Yeah. I just feel like he has big D energy.
I feel like he's been the white boy for like a year now.
And Timothy Chalamet.
100%. I watched Don't Look Up or Look Up last night, and he was in it, but he was in it for like 20 minutes. But his name was like on bold like writing when it came to the credits.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking like that's his worth. That's how famous he is. And also within 1 year he must have done 3 films.
Yeah, he did.
Three films were released.
June, French Dispatch,
Don't know how I feel about him though. Like, do I like him?
His character.
I feel like he's his personality in real life is 10/10. But his acting is just like,
it's mediocre.
It's so mediocre. Yeah. Okay, so let's get back to like a real, you know, back to the podcast. So other than like talking about like our monthly favorites, because we have a guest, like we need to be asking questions, you know what I mean? So yeah, like let's start off like with icebreakers. So one of the first questions that I had was, what is your last meal?
I already know. Katsu curry. 100% katsu curry. I'm addicted. Like, it's so good.
Okay. Anything else?
No.
Is your last curry. Meal first?
Katsu curry.
Okay. Is there from like a specific place?
My sister's katsu curry.
Oh, she made it.
Yeah.
Wow. Homemade.
So like, she has with curry cubes.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay.
But
what about the chicken?
She made it. Bought.
It's okay. We don't judge. We don't judge.
Yeah. No, but if you taste it, it's so good. So
but
my comfort meal all the time. I've like I've associated it with happiness. Because I can only have it at a certain event, so like definitely my last meal.
Okay. Yes, what about you?
My would you rather question is, you know, we're so mad.
This is what's
all oh what's my
I was
oh,
what's that?
It was actually toast.
Toast?
Yeah, so bland.
God bless.
No, sometimes it hits.
Yeah. When you're hungry as well. 100%. I feel like it's a poverty meal, but it's the epitome of being British. Like, do you want me a bit of tea and toast? But yeah, that was my last meal. I'm not going to lie to you.
What was yours? I don't know. Like, I really don't know. If you ask me that, I'll be like, I'll starve. Because I won't make up my mind. I'm so indecisive. It's an illness.
It's like that guy from Good Place.
That's his name. I used to love The Good Place so much. But I guess if I had to decide, it would be Shin Ramyun.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Shin Ramyun. Like, you can't go wrong. Like, and it's just hot. Like, it would take all the pain away. 100%. My last meal. Yeah.
Do you just make it like the packet says, or do you free mix it? Like,
I literally make it into my own.
I love that.
Gourmet. Okay, the next question.
My would you rather is, you know, we're Somali. I mean, this is the quintessential Somali podcast. So, Briso Basto. I feel like I already know, but it's okay. I'm all ears, love.
I'm getting the vibe too.
I'm gonna say Basto.
That's my girl.
Can you tell?
Go.
What do you love about Basto?
No, but Okay, so, like, I went vegetarian for a couple of years. So, I didn't even have bris and hilib because, of course, like, you use hilib broth.
Yeah.
But, like spaghetti bolognese or, like, pasta, I used to use, like, protein soya, which is, like, fake meat. So, I just used to have it, like, all the time. Like, mum would make it. Or, like, I would make it. There's no hilib substitute for making a piece of hilib, so I just didn't eat it. But, like, yeah, that's literally the reason.
The reason.
But back in the days, it was bris and hilib.
Bris and hilib.
100%, yeah.
Good.
Did I give a Basta vibes?
Yeah.
Is that a good or bad?
I'm a Basta vibes.
I mean, she's Basta vibes and she's one of my like closest friends.
How could you tell?
I just have a feeling. Like, I've never been wrong. If I see someone else, I'm like, I know.
You see that British thing?
The little grain of rice.
No.
Basta people are elite. I feel like, yeah. How do you like your Basta? Al dente or not soggy, but like...
Al dente.
Okay.
I like it crunchy.
I love that. Not too crunchy, but like, you know, my mom, when I make it, that's the thing is, she makes the suga, I make the pasta. We make it separately. Because she hates, I make the suga, she makes the pasta, because she's always saying like, it's hard. And I say, Hoya, the Italians made it like this. Yeah, and it's not hard to the point where it's painful. Yeah. It's just like, it's not like too, like soggy. Do you know what I mean? It's just a perfect texture.
But when it's soggy, it sticks together.
I don't like that. That's the thing I hate.
It has that residue.
Yeah, the starch. It's the starch.
It's the starch.
It's the starch, babe. Yeah. Scale Ali.
No, but it gives me the ick. It does. When I see, like, the little residue.
Also, like, if you overcook your pasta, that's actually the scariest thing, because the sugo is wet.
Yeah.
And your pasta is basically mush.
It shouldn't be like that. But I don't like Vapiano
baby food.
Oh, no, my texture issues couldn't.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It has to be the perfect. Yeah. But I don't like, you know, Vapiano ones. I don't like the pasta in Vapiano's because it's too al dente. But I like the linguine in the pasta because they make it just right. So I'm very picky. When I taste it, I'm like, no. This might be a bit of me. So I'm very picky to the point where I time it and then I quickly like taste
it. Actually time it?
I time it and I also taste it because I'm very, that's probably my picky.
Bless. You know when it is, like, I've cooked biri since I was 14. Now I just know when it's up. Like, I know when to turn off the hob. I know, like, when to let it steam. I basically know what's going on even when, like, the lid is, like, closing the pot.
Yeah.
What
do you call it when, like, you put the lid on and you're letting it, like, simmer?
Hur.
Yeah. Brushing up on my Somali.
Literally learning new words every day.
I love that. Honey, what was your... Oh, no, what's your would you rather?
Okay, so my other would you rather was... would you rather live in a city for the rest of your life and not travel? Or would you rather live in a remote countryside but only travel, like, when it's possible?
I think... One thing that I've learned from, like, being in a rural place the past few months, I'm a city girl. 100%.
Come love that.
I need the transport links, like, shops open past 6 p.m. I need it. So definitely city.
We'd love to see that.
I'm a city girl at heart. So, yeah, that's so easy.
Okay, good.
And what about you?
Yeah, 100% city girl. Okay. City girl through and through. But I feel like it's a bit of a sticky one still, because I'm in my mind, like, I really aim to live that cottagecore life.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
I really just like, but I know it's a fantasy, like, at least I'm self-aware. Like, it's definitely a fantasy, and the way, like, people have hyped up, you know, like, those nightgowns, Twitter. Like, those floral dresses. What's it? Ducks. Oh my god, I went through a duck phase, guys. Like, baby chicks. Yeah. I mean, I won't get onto it because that's a conversation for my therapist. But yeah, like, I really want to have, like, that remote country house and just, like, live by, not by myself, but, like, in my own company. But I'm realizing that's not possible because, like, I need to constantly socialize. And I need to, like, experience new ideas and stuff like that. So the only place you can do that is in the city.
In the city. No, you're right. I think I would agree with both of you guys. You know, with being in the city, it has everything you need. You're able to socialise. And I think being, like, secluded, especially in the countryside, I just think of it as, first of all, everything's far away. You don't have access to halal meat. Your neighbours are predominantly elderly, you know, white, middle class. So it's hard for you to, like, assimilate. And plus, like, I'm visibly Muslim, so I can never really assimilate like that. So I always worry in that sense. But I think that's my dream as well, just to get away. When it comes to summer, like, going, getting a cottage with your friends, or, like... Yeah. Doing like a getaway, a country getaway, essentially. But I think, yeah, I'm a city girl through and through.
Yeah, I remember that time in Berlin when we had no access to halal meat. Mm-hmm. We were basically vegetarian.
By choice.
I was basically a vegetarian for like a whole year.
Mm.
And then that's when I realised that...
You were in Berlin for a year.
Yeah. And that's when I realised, like, meat ain't shit. Like, I could easily cut that off. And I did.
Mm.
I haven't had meat in... Well, I haven't had chicken and red meat in, like, 4 months now.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's actually mad.
So, yeah, I developed a new habit without even trying.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what happens, like, when you're taking out of, like, you've taken yourself out of, like, your comfort zone,
mm-hmm.
etc.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it was so weird. Like, I remember having, like, meat withdrawals in the first few months. I'm like, I need meat.
Mm-hmm.
I need meat. It was so bad. And what's it? I remember Yasmin put a chicken in a container in the fridge.
And I boiled it because I didn't want it to go bad.
And it looked so sad.
But that's when I realised the meat was bad there. Just the quality of meat there was poor. Like, when I bought red meat, I had to, like, cook it that day. I had to buy a small bunch.
We didn't have a freezer in our apartment.
Since they really made a struggle, I'm not even going to lie to you. Like, they made a struggle.
100% struggling.
We just had a fridge.
Yeah.
It was poor, honestly. But I remember, like, I think for about 4 or 5 months, I didn't have meat. And then, what's her name? No, the stuffler was, like, from September to about November or December.
Mm-hmm.
And then Noor put me on and said, oh, there's a meat shop that I found. So, like, whenever, like, she would let me use hers and then I'd go and buy some for mm-hmm. us. But, yeah, it just wasn't sustainable because, like, we didn't have a freezer. So, I remember, I think I only went to the meat shop twice, actually, subhanAllah.
Mm-hmm.
And I started eating a lot more fish and just, like, vegetarian. So, I was, like, yeah, I was basically a pescatarian, but I was also, like, a vegetarian as well.
Mm-hmm.
And also maybe a bit of vegan, but in and out because I only drank plant-based milk, but I was eating cheese, like, a regular person.
Everyone does that.
Why is everyone that everybody's life? You know what it is? I feel like I can become vegan, but the only thing that's stopping me isn't milk, but natural yogurt.
Yogurt?
My obsession with natural yogurt. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I can't. And what's it? The one from... what's that brand? Not...
Müller.
Not Müller, but that soya brand. But yeah, basically, Alpro. Soya, exactly, Alpro, the yogurt doesn't bang.
It doesn't. It only doesn't. The vanilla one bangs.
Yeah.
The plain one is also.
Yeah, but but the thing is, it's like, I don't, when I have natural yogurt, I don't really have it with, like, fruits or, like, sweet things. I eat it with savoury food.
Mm.
That's why.
Wait, like what?
So, savoury food, so, like, dip it in with bread, toast, what's it, rice on the side.
Yeah, rice with it is really nice. It balances it out, I'm not going to lie to you.
100%.
Yeah. Also, rice and yogurt.
Rice and yogurt.
It's such an Arab thing, you know that? Because it's like, it balances out the pH in your stomach.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It makes it more digestible.
Mm.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, food for thought, innit?
Mm.
So, the next thing that, like, I wanted to talk about was... Okay, so now that... Are we done with the questions?
The question, yeah.
Cool. Yeah, so next thing we wanted to talk about was, like, finding a creative outlet. And, yeah, we're going to get onto that in the next segment. So stay tuned. Welcome back to the next segment, guys. So on this part, we're going to be talking about, you know, creativity and finding a creative outlet. And I feel like Yasmin and I, like, we're creative in our own way, but not in the same way, if that
mm-hmm.
makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And recently, I've been going through, I don't know, like, a quarter-life crisis, because I feel like when you have one side of your life together, the other side seems to fall apart. And I feel like my creative side is dying, basically. And yeah, like, I'm trying to revive it, but the stuff that I used to do isn't having that same impact. So I guess, like, I've been struggling. And yeah, like, Yasmin, I just wanted to know, like, how have you dealt with that? Like, what is your creative outlet to begin with?
Sis, I'm not even going to lie to you. You know my creative outlet as a kid? I would always dabble. So I think I already spoke to, like, Hannah said she'd dabble in different things and then she always struggled to, like, continue with it. And I was always, like, not envious in a bad way, but I was always, like, made to have them along, but people that, like, had a talent or, like, had a skill or their creative outlet and, like, they nurtured it, but not only, like, themselves, but their parents would, you know, like, they'll say, okay, let's enroll you in classes, okay, let's do this, let's, you know, they'll push you. So I feel like as a kid, like, I always liked writing and I always liked I was like public speaking, but like I feel like I didn't really like, no, I can't really blame my parents and say like, why didn't you do this one? Because it's like they come from a different generation. So I feel like I had to reach a point where I was like, okay, I'm gonna do it myself. So I would always like do like blog entries and stuff. And even like one of our classes that we took in, or actually for me, sorry, in Berlin, was creative writing. So I think that kind of opened my eyes up to like different types of writing styles, not really like the general, you know, book writing, publishing. It's more blog entries, it's more posts, just different type of writing, I guess, poems, spoken word. But I really just wish if I can go back in time that I pushed myself to do debating, because I remember I started, I stopped. And then where I really thought that I picked it up was when I did an EPQ project in year 12. And I was like, yeah, public speaking is for me. So when I go uni, I'm going to join a debating class. Okay, I'm going to join Model United Nation. I had a plan. But then once I got there, I feel like I just felt jaded and I felt out of place. I was like, I don't have time for that. So I feel like I really just want to pick that up, like probably public speaking. But I feel like I've kind of honed it with the podcast, because that is speaking and also radio. Yeah. So, yeah, like I think speaking and writing. And I think I am kind of like honing in on that when it comes to the podcast. So, yeah, something that I really want to continue with, inshallah. I really just hope, Yasmeen, like you better pull through by the age of 30. You're going to have a TED Talk, answer, period. You're going to give people these gems because, sis, I mean, you've seen a lot in life. But, yeah, I think that's my dream, inshallah. One of my dreams. What about you, sis?
Let me throw it to Hannah. Ooh, what do you think, sis?
I think I try my hardest to have a creative side. Because honestly, if you don't have a creative side, I just feel like you're not really living. Like, I feel like humans are such creative creatures. When you're not doing things that kind of nurture your creative side, you just feel so bored of life. I don't know, I feel like that's just me personally. So I try my hardest to do things that kind of make me feel excited or like make me feel happy. And like, it's hard to dabble in them when you're older, because I feel like there's an expectation that you should be good at it, or like it's hard to start things you're not immediately good at. So like, I've tried roller skating, I've tried ice skating, I've tried boxing, like anything, like you name it, I've tried it. But I feel like now one of the creative hobbies that I'm kind of interested in is like filming. Like, I love cinematography. Like, I love the idea that you can film something and make someone feel, like, feel something as a result. I love movies. Like, speaking of Spider-Man earlier, I love, is it, like, when you talk about reactions or, like, people crying or, like, people being happy, I find it so cool that, like, a film can do that. Or, like, yeah, even the cinema like, experience, everyone's clapping, everyone feels kind of connected just by watching a two-hour film. Like, that's so weird. Yeah. Like, yeah, it's really weird. It's, like, just painting, just, like, art. Just making things that make you and the audience like feel a way or like conveying something. So like that's like what I'm kind of trying to do. So,
yeah, that's amazing, because like, you know, when you're watching a film, everybody in that space is feeling the same thing more or less. And I don't know, because like with cinematography, it's like it uses every aspect of the film, whether that be color, costume, and acting, to evoke some sort of feeling. I love it. I feel like when you said cinematography, for some reason, Grand Budapest Hotel came to mind. And then you started talking about emotion. And then I watched that film Coco, the Disney one.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I love that. New comfort film unlocked. Because for some reason, like, I was crying in that film. And then like, when I was watching that film, it was one tear. It was one tear. When I say crying, it's one tear. Because for some reason, I can't cry normally.
Can you not?
No, I have one tear.
That's kind
of strange. It's a shame. So, yeah, like, a single tear. And, yeah, I feel like that film was so amazing. I was looking into it, and apparently it's based on a real story, which made it even more sad.
It even teaches things about, like, their culture, too. Like, the Day of the Dead. It's just so educational. But yeah, crying at movies, sometimes you stop and think, like, I'm actually crying on a screen. It's kind of weird. But yeah, like, literally, media is just, like, realising how powerful media is, especially today. Insane. Like, it teaches, like, every single thing. Like, every single movement has been based in media, which is so wild to think about. Or, like, how easy it is now to make and show off media, like, on so many different sites and like platforms. So yeah
would you ever make your own film one day?
I don't know. I just feel like, honestly, if we were in a world where like money didn't matter, that would definitely be like, I would try to create a movie or I'd try to do something like in film, but like it's so risky and it's like based on like links and stuff. Therefore, like, I'm so sad, but I just have to go down the conventional route of just like getting a job. But I don't know, maybe if like I'm older and like I'm feeling a bit, you know, risky, like I might do that.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Honestly, I was thinking about nepotism and how easy You know what it is? At one point, not even at one point, my dream is still to be a Nepo baby.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Oh my gosh, every time I see, what's it, a Nepo baby doing something, like,
must be
my current Nepo favourite, before it was Willow Smith, what's it, in her Transparency era, but now it's Iris Law.
Oh, Jude Law's daughter.
Jude Law's daughter.
And Jude Law and his, she's very beautiful.
She is very gorgeous. She's serving looks after looks. She's not resting.
I'm so jealous.
Yeah. I know, and she's in Jamaica right now, living her best life.
Island girl.
So yeah, going back to the whole creative outlet thingy, I'm going to try and like pick up more things. I'll try creative writing because I feel like that was one of the things that I used to love. But also oil painting. I used to have, I still have a lot of canvases. So I have like a storage space in my bedroom and there's like different size canvases that I used to work on like during my A-level days. And yeah, I'm going to see if I can, like, I can paint over those canvases like and then start over, like just upcycling my old work.
Yeah, I love that.
Environmentally friendly.
Yeah. Okay. So the other thing that we wanted to talk about was consistency within, like when you're pursuing like a creative outlet. Yeah, mine has definitely died.
Same.
My consistency has died. Yeah. Also, like starting a 9-to-5, I feel like it's gonna die even more. So there's no hope.
But honestly, I feel like our world isn't made up for you to be consistent. Even as like you're 9-to-5, like, in 9-to-5s are not 9-to-5s, like, I don't care. You don't wake up at 9 and you don't finish at 5. They're more like 7-to-7.
It's true.
So like, how can you have a creative outlet in a world that is structured in that way? Like, it's so difficult.
It's not possible.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So like, I wouldn't blame you for like not being consistent if you have a job. It's so tiring. Like, people who are consistent with, like, the creative side and, like, the academic side or, like, their career, I don't know how they do it. We don't have the same 24 hours in a day.
We don't.
But you know what I'm realising? Like, in order, well, success is very subjective. But for me, what I see as success is, like, having multiple side projects and, like, other streams of income. Alongside, like, your main income source. So, yeah, like, I feel like because of that, I'm also pushing myself to find new creative outlets because I know that I'm more likely to be successful in those, in those things. And then if I adopt new outlets, I'm creating more wealth and like more success,
more streams of income as well. You know what I love though? You know when people they say they have like a regular 9-to-5 and then maybe that writing was like a hobby that they really like, or painting, or I don't know, like photography, whatever it was, and then they kind of crossed that bridge and they made that their hobby, and that's, you know, they've invested time and energy. And I love seeing success stories, particularly during the pandemic, as all people said, I was in corporate, I was a lawyer, I was doing
and
this.
Now I'm a food blogger.
Yeah, I was thinking
like Korean vegan. I love that. Allahu Mubarak. Honestly, I think that's just amazing, and it's testament that like still have that on the side. Don't let that go. Don't let that creative outlet go.
I mean, I'm going to manifest it now, guys. My dream, like, my retirement dream is to open a bakery.
Yes.
Yeah. That is my dream. Because, like, baking is, and also, like, just food in general is such a big thing. I'm not trying to be a food blogger, but I literally want to make people coffee every morning. What's that guy from Love Island? That, who's going to be there to make everybody tea?
I know his name. Hugo.
Curtis.
Wait, who's Hugo?
Hugo is the...
Oh, it's, yeah, Chris.
Chris. So, yeah, I just want to be that person that makes coffee for people every morning. And also, like, in my mind, I already planned out my menu. Like, the menu will change every week. So, like, the staple pieces are croissant, a cookie of choice, and, like, three different types of cake. But we're also going to have, like, a brunch meal, and that will change every day. So, like, and every Friday, I plan to make Somali food. Like,
I love Somali
breakfast, or whether that be lunch or whatever.
Yeah.
I see you like dabbling in different cuisines, particularly like Turkish, like Mijami says shakshuka. Yeah. Jami, that's you. When I think of shakshuka, I think of honey.
I mean, yeah, I love shakshuka.
Period. I think of your mum too.
That's friends.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, honestly, that is my like life goal. Mm-hmm. Like right now, even though I'm doing this and this, and like I'm doing podcasting, mm-hmm. it doesn't mean anything to me. Just know my crown thingy. My loyalty is lying with Camilla.
Yeah.
That one. I don't bring the kids into this.
But then, even, like, going back to creative outlets, mm-hmm. I like it's so hard to a creative outlet because there's that need to monetize it or, like, hustle it.
You're right.
So it's like, oh, my God. You can't just, like, paint for being good at painting. It's like, oh, I'm going to be good so I can sell paintings.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, I'm not going to bake for fun. I'm going to, like, record this and get, you know, my TikTok creator money.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea of, like, creative outlets being monetized things that are there for wealth, forming is like
it loses
it's just lost its value.
It's just our capitalist mindset, like we've honestly been trained like this because
it's true.
I think we think that time is money, so we're thinking I'm spending x amount of hours on this, I should get this, you know. So it's hard, especially when you've got bills to pay and like you've got a family, like it's kind of hard, you know.
That's what I mean. It's always like just been a privilege to have a creative outlet, but it's kind of like what you realize as you get older. So when you're young, you paint and no one's like telling you why you're painting. When you're older, it's like, why are you wasting your time doing this? Like, what's it going to do for you?
Mm-hmm.
So just like much more difficult to like be in tune with that kind of side of yourself.
Yeah. No, I definitely get what you mean. Okay, so we're quickly moving on to our next segment, which is we're going to be talking about education.
Mm-hmm.
So stay tuned for that. Okay, so we're going to be wrapping it up soon, but before that, we definitely wanted to talk about Hannah's, you know, education journey and, like, what she's doing now. So do you just want to pass it on and, like, talk about where you're going right now and what do you study as well?
So I study history and politics at Cambridge. I honestly, when I was applying... So I took a gap year, then I applied afterwards. I spent my gap year kind of working in a school, helping children of immigrant families kind of hold on to their English whilst only speaking a mother tongue, because of course schools are closed at this time, helping them with their literature and their numeracy type of thing. And whilst I was working in school is when the political debate trying to feed school meals were happening. So I was kind of in the middle of it because of course like the proportion of immigrant kids being at preschools is very high, so the kids that I were helping, they were the kids that the debate was about. So I was just thinking, like, I'm seeing firsthand how this is affecting the kids, and I was like, I want to change this. That's when I started to study, well, apply to study history and politics. Mm-hmm. So I applied always with the goal in mind that I was going to go into politics or do something about it, and it is still in the back of my head now, but politics is so iffy. Like, it's not guaranteed, like, you need to have votes, and especially when your political beliefs aren't the mainstream beliefs, mm-hmm. it's even that much harder to go into it. So I think now, honestly, I'm still going to try to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm still, like, right now I'm trying to get work experience, kind of with my local MP. It's always a goal of mine to try and do something about it, because, like, I feel like once you've seen it firsthand, then you'll know how much, like, you want to do it, regardless of how iffy it is, regardless of how not guaranteed the success is, just at least wanting to have a go whilst you're still young.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel that's just always been my end goal, and that's, like, the one thing that kind of gets me through when terms are quite difficult.
Yeah, I definitely understand what you're saying, because I remember being first year and, like, having an idea... Well, having this idea of the world where, like, it's so, you know, messed up and so dark and grim, and, you know, like, the new generations is going to be the group that changes it, like, does something about it. And then I left my degree feeling even more confused than I got in. Mm-hmm. At least, like, when I was going in, I had, like, some idea about what politics is from my own perspective, like, from my own analysis on what I've gathered observing society. But when you, at the end of your degree, you realise, you know, there's so much bureaucracy, there's so much agents, there's so much, you know, internal disputes and conflict within just at the domestic level, let alone we did international politics. So a lot of the time we was looking at other states and how they communicated with Britain, for example. But even watching the news right now, I'm realizing that not only is this country like really polarized, but also very individualistic. And then me and my friends were talking about one. She does sociology, and she's writing a paper on what's her title again? Something about happiness and individualism. And then I was trying to like educate her on like Thatcher and like how she created like this housing bubble that we're in, but also like what she did to the miners as well. And like she had this like mentality where it's like pull yourselves up from the bootstrap. Yeah. And basically dismantled like the whole community thingy that we was talking about earlier, where, you know, a child needs more people than just their family. So because of, you know, post Thatcher, like we've become so internalized with like us looking out for number one. And that's what I realized with politics. It's basically looking out for number one. Like even though with politics, it's I always associate politics with people. Like politics equals people. So whenever you talk about politics, you're talking about every aspect of life. And I'm realizing that like at the end of my degree, it's more how you can benefit from politics, not what you can contribute it. So I really like, if you're thinking about doing politics, I really recommend you pair it up with something. So I really wish I did politics and sociology. I feel like that would have enhanced my knowledge even more, or even like politics and history. But because I did international politics, like kind of messed me up, because I'm realizing that this is really hard to change our political system at the domestic level, at the national level, but also like how we can help other countries, you know, develop, and how we can, you know, improve international ties as well. Because, you know, what I'm realizing post Brexit is that we've become more isolationist, so we're keeping to ourselves even more, and that's affected like us traveling, us like applying for jobs. So yeah, I feel like Britain definitely doesn't know where it stands at the moment.
Yeah, just rambling.
No, it makes sense. Well, that makes a lot more.
But I get what you're saying about the study of politics teaches you about what it does for you, not how you can then go and change the structures. Honestly, I have so many problems with education in itself. So, like, even my Cambridge curriculum is very much Tory-centred. It is very, very, it is so heavy, like, heavily conservative. Like, sometimes my sister makes jokes about me being radicalised in my curriculum because I'm out here writing essays where the Conservatives are better for the working class.
Really?
Or even the reading lists are very centred to a certain idea. So if you want to read something, you have to go out of your way to get the other perspective. Or like I remember once I was having a lecture on Beveridge. So like Beveridge wrote the report that is what the NHS is on. In not one of the lectures did they mention Beveridge was a hard eugenicist. And, like, he did not care for the working class. Wow. But that is his character profile, so you don't even learn a lot about these people. So, like, if I didn't know that, I'd leave the lecture thinking, wow, like, Beveridge was a great person, when he literally wasn't. Like, he wasn't in the slightest. So I feel like, literally, it's so hard to leave education and think that you can change things.
Yeah.
Because, number one, you're not taught how to. And, number two, if you don't get out of your way, you just see things at face value. Or, like, you leave with a heavy burden of, like, oh, I can't change things. So, like, I spoke to people older than me who went into politics at Cambridge. And they thought, you know what, I'm at a place where I have these links. Like, you know, I can do it. If I try my hardest, I can get work experience. Like, most Tory MPs, or just most MPs in general, went to Oxbridge. And then they always talk about how they went in with the idea of, like, I'm going to change things. And then by the time they left, they were just like, oh, you know what? I actually can't.
Yeah.
Like, because if you, like, literally, if you don't do your own reading, especially at old institutions where they're, of course, teaching you certain old ideas, then you're going to leave very different to how you started. Or, like, even just going to leave a bit more, like...
deluded.
Yeah, like, not even deluded, just like, things are okay as they are, which is kind of what, yeah, they just teach you to kind of be complacent, especially at top unis. And honestly, that's why I think that Oxbridge produced, like, Tory MPs. Like, every single Oxbridge MP is Tory. And when you think about the politics curriculum there, or the history curriculum, you kind of see why. So, like, I'm on, like, JCR, and I'm trying to, like, change the curriculum to be a bit more, not even inclusive of other political ideologies, but just not be so like narrow, just teaching you one thing, and like that's the be all end all. Like just diversifying it a bit is what I'm trying to do. But yeah,
no, I definitely understand what you mean. I was talking to I don't know if he works for the civil service now, but basically this person that was head of the education department, yeah, so definitely civil service, yeah. So he worked in the education side of the government, and we were talking about the education system and then when he was there versus now. So I just asked him, like, what are your thoughts on, like, the curriculum changing? And he realised that, like, it's really messed up because back then the curriculum was a little bit more diversified in terms of, like, what children were reading. I'm talking about, like, the humanities side of it. But now it's like they're pushing children to only read British literature. Because back then when we was doing poetry and anthology, a lot of the poets that we were analysing, the texts where we were reading were, you know, of Black people, of Asian people. And I remember, like, this one poem, I think it's called, like, Half Caste, where this biracial person was talking about his experience of, like, not being accepted by either race. And then now, like, I'm realising a lot of this has been, like, taken away, and purposely so. But and with Cambridge, it's even more apparent because, like, it's a private institution. Like, it's not nationalised. So they control what, like, students are reading. And, yeah, like, in terms of uni as a whole, I'm realising it's, like, you're not supposed to critically think. They mould you. Like, they accept you based on, like, your ability to be moulded into the person that they want to be.
They call it teachability.
Teachability, whatever. Yeah. They had this, like, in corporate as well. It's like they're looking for somebody with a certain set of skills, but people that don't have everything, so they can teach you, so they can fill in the gaps. And that's what uni basically does. But in terms of, like, my experience with uni and, like, the literature reading, I'm happy with it. Like, yeah, I don't remember, like, having an issue. Like, basically, we had this, I think for third year, I don't know if you did it, was it the Arab and Israeli conflict? And I was, like, really hesitant to pick that because this was, like, the height of, like, the Palestine issue. Mm-hmm. Not at the height because it's been ongoing, but, like, recently, like, it's been getting much worse. Mm-hmm. So I didn't want to take that class specifically for that, but also just, like, the hate as well. Like, I couldn't bring myself to do it. But did you do it?
No, that was going to be one of my choices.
I think one of my friends did it, but
Ahlam did it.
But I looked at the reading before I applied, and one of the reading was the Holy Quran. So and he specifically picked out, you know, scriptures and texts, and also one for the Torah as well. So and then that's when I realized, like, you know, the reading doesn't really reflect, like, my ideas. My ideas were a bit more negative, and I realised that, like, you know, this person isn't talking about it from a biased standpoint. Like, he definitely wants to consider both sides. So I really, it depends on, like, the uni. That's what I'm saying. Like, not all unis are, you know, trying to brainwash students. Because one time, I did a terrorism class. Did I tell you the story? Literally on my first day in that module, we were talking about the we'll say the right-wing people storming White House, D.C. And this guy was like, yeah, but it's worse. I mean, it's better because you remember the whole Black Lives Matter movement and they were breaking private like, where are you making these connections from? They're completely two different events. And then that's when I realised, like, you know, sometimes it's not the curriculum, it's the individual itself. It depends, like, on the person, really.
But sis, you know, I'm not gonna lie, it depends on the uni as well. But I feel like, you know, for Brunel, because there's a module that I took his theories of IR, and, like, you know, when you think of, like, international relations, you know, we were always taught about the mainstream, like, theory, which was, like, realism and liberalism. And then my module leader, he was just talking and said, oh, back in my day, basically just, like, 20 plus years ago, we only just learnt about the mainstream. We didn't learn about feminism. We didn't learn about post-colonialism. And then for 1 week, we had to learn about post-colonialism. And then this was in the seminars, so everyone's sitting down and we just discussed. And I think this one Adan guy, he said, I didn't understand it. I read it. He legit said verbatim, it was wishy-washy. It was hard to understand. They made it about race and inequality. I looked back and I said, did you actually read it? So we had an actual discussion on it. And, like, one thing that I noticed is, like, you're saying that because, of course, like, with post-colonialism, they do look at, like, they look at history. post-colonialism and just how, like, key events in history has contributed to the IR, like, the discipline. And they always say that with the mainstream IR theory, they look at the international scale, but they fail to, like, include marginalised groups, so women, working class, and also, like, coloured people, black people, essentially. And I think we were reading, like, Orientalism, I think his name was Edward Said, mm-hmm. and, like, that was, like, a key, that's such yeah, a great, yeah, it's a really yes. good book, I'm not gonna lie to you. And I think the teacher basically said, no, you're right, like, I'm glad that Brunel, like, basically, they did a whole module on feminism, but also post-colonialism. Mm-hmm. And he was just talking about, like, how that relates to today, but it's just so interesting how people don't take feminism and also post-colonialism as actual IR theories because they're not the mainstream. They're not the realism and constructivism and liberalism. So it's just like, damn, like, it just felt like, I don't know, even when I was reading something, it didn't make sense because I was reading it and then I asked them a few questions about it. But it's like, when I look at IR, there's nothing about colour. There's always just about, there's power, there's nation state, and we're all in the pursuit of power. It's about who has the bigger gun. It's about who can pursue this, you know?
Yeah.
And they never look at the smaller people, like women, how they've contributed to it. And like a lot of the theories, they're Adan, middle-aged men.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see coloured people. And I think a lot of the reading, they were like feminists and also like Edward Said as well, like, mm-hmm. I think he's Palestinian.
Yeah,
so it's like, it was nice getting like a different feel for it. So I feel like with academia, one thing I've realized is they always teach you the mainstream, the as you said, maybe the conservative, the traditional school of thoughts, so you do have to dabble in it and like learn for yourself. So I think with academia, I think one thing I've realized is you have to read out extensively outside of the subject because you're not going to pick up on it. And I always told myself, when I go to uni, I'm going to be in a liberal setting. I'm going to be basically exposed to all these ideologies, these thoughts. And it's like, no, like, sometimes they're brainwashing you because it's like, if you're not thinking for yourself and thinking critically and actually thinking, no, hold up. I see where this has value, but to some degree. And if you don't think outside of the box, you're screwed. Well, like, you're screwed because you're indoctrinated.
But when you talk about the academic writers, they themselves are white, middle-aged people.
Mm-hmm. And they have, like, preferences, bias.
Yeah, natural biases.
You have to find somebody who's actually, like, honestly, I have a very big problem with reading literature about an event that people weren't part of, or they don't have. So, like, for instance, like, even if the Arab Israeli conflict and you're reading something about a white woman from America, I'm just like, this doesn't have value to me. Like, I'm so sorry, but this doesn't have value to me. I'd much rather read something from somebody of that origin who has, not even, like, experienced it, but somebody who knows, like, you know, the religious ties, the cultural ties, like, why that situation is as important as it is, especially the Arab-Israeli conflict, or just things, like, on a religious scale. It's so sad that academic writers who have such prominent voices on some topics do not, like, they just don't deserve to have that type of voice, I feel like. So I feel like sometimes in academia, it's the fault of, like, both the university, but even the fact that at university, or, like, just in academia, they're just, those voices aren't publicized, like, they don't exist. Well, they do exist, but they're so pushed back, and it's always, like, the white person at the forefront. But honestly, like, to some degree, I do feel like universities have a role to play in things like reading lists.
They do.
Like, I honestly think they need
to be updated.
Yeah, or, like, even the curriculum, like, I feel like they have a responsibility to search for voices that matter, voices that have been pushed back, voices that kind of, like, deserve to have a say, or, like, even just teaching you basic principles, like, just, like, basic theories like post-colonialist theory, like, feminist theory, and then having those critical theories in the back of your mind as you're reading a text, like, that is so crucial to becoming, like, a well-rounded individual, I feel like, or a critical thinking individual, and, like, thank God, like, I had those in my head already before I even, like, started studying, especially a subject like politics, where it's so central, because what you're studying is going to influence your beliefs, whether, like, you like it or not, which is, like, some people, literally, I feel like some people, to enter Cambridge, I think they're going to change the world or change politics, they don't end up doing it because they see, because they literally end their degree not seeing something wrong with our political system, because of the reason, because of, like, what they've been taught, and the fact that they've not critically thought about the society in which they live in. Like, they leave genuinely thinking, yeah, this is fine. Like, literally, some people genuinely look at political system and think, this is okay. Like, this is right. This is normal. Yeah, like, capitalism is okay. Like, the society we're living in doesn't need to be changed. And it's, like, it's just so crazy. That's what, yeah. Education is just very important. But it's more important to engage in your education and, like, just be able to navigate it yourself, and not just read things and write essays, but just read things, think about it, and write an essay that, you know, is well-rounded, has the voices of many, you know. Yeah.
And take something from it as well.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but you know how, like, they provide you, like, the reading list, and, like, they'll tell you, like, about certain events. They need to also, like, help you write it, if that makes sense. Mm. Because the difference between academic writing and normal writing and communicating verbally, the difference is that with academic writing, is that you have to phrase it in a way that's, like, more, you know, less conversational. Mm. It can't be conversational. And also, it has to be more critical, but they'll never teach you that. Like, we were just talking about, like, unis and, like, them moulding you, like, in terms of teachability, but if you're getting more marks for being critical, why don't you push that forward? Like, when you go to uni, they'll never tell you, like, nobody tells you be critical, unless, like, they're genuinely giving you feedback on your paper. But it's never pushed, and I feel like they do it on purpose. Like, they're trying to weed out students, if that makes sense, from ones that are, you know, blindly absorbing information, and the ones that are genuinely trying to, like, figure out why it is the way it is. And I feel like especially when you're 18, it's almost manipulative, because they're criticizing your work but not doing anything about it. That makes sense. That's my problem with uni. So you end up, like, not only finding faults, like, with the world, and if you study politics, like, the political system, but also finding faults within the uni life and academic system as a whole.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I agree. I think, to be honest, I write very critically purely because I'm an overthinker. So, like, I've always, like, had critical thinking skills. But, like, yeah, I definitely agree. Like, honestly, I think critical thinking should be a module in itself, because it's just, like, so key to just daily life. Like, even up until you go to university, you haven't had a critical thought in your life. Like, you've genuinely not. Like, you've literally just gone to school, you've done your reading, and you sat your GCSEs. You've never had to form an opinion. You've never had to be your own person before. You've never had to, like, have an ideology or, like, a belief. And then you go to uni and suddenly everyone's, like, has something they, you know, believe in. They have something, like, not even a political ideology. They have visions. They have, like, thoughts about, you know, every single topic under the sun, like, the culture, things like that. And, like, you're just not that at 18 years old. And, like, not luckily, but other people have the privilege of being, you know, cultured and being critical and, like, having different visions and having different ideology to be part of, but, like, not everyone does. And then when you go to an institution where you're learning things, but you lack critical thinking, and you, like, just, like, in general, you just lack so many things, it's so hard to fully engage with education, like, the educational system or, like, the academic system, because you're just not at that level yet.
Yeah.
Which I just feel like you should be taught, like, the jump from A-levels to flipping uni, it's crazy.
In terms of, like, your experience in Cambridge, how has it been different to A-levels? Like, in terms of, like, teaching?
Teaching, shocking. I do know, it's so weird, the fact that you don't have a timetable at uni. We do have a timetable, like, lecture schedule, but, like, at school you have a fuller timetable. At uni you don't. There's no registers, so it's literally up to you if you want to turn up or not. Bear in mind, this Christmas, I have to catch up on about 60 lectures that I didn't attend last term. It's insane, purely because there was no one telling me, oh, do that, do this. No one keeping up on, like, the absences, and I've just been so used to that. Or, like, even living alone, waking up by yourself, the responsibility totally being on you to go out, do your classes, do your work, hand in stuff, it's so difficult. Like, even, like, the pastoral side of things, like, in your A-levels, if, like, you would never be allowed to get as behind as you're allowed to get at uni. Like, in, like, during A-levels, if you miss a class, you're being emailed the work, you know what I mean? Or, like, if you've missed more than, like, one class, you're getting sent to, like, the pastoral team or something, like, you're getting a letter home. At uni, I don't know how I was allowed to get as behind as I have got. Like, structure's a big issue that I feel like it's so difficult and no one ever speaks about. Like, suddenly you're in your own bubble. It genuinely is your own bubble, because it is your own dorm, and you're expected to feed yourself, to go out by yourself, mm-hmm. to like literally navigate a whole new world, like world by yourself, a new city by yourself, new friendships, new relationships by yourself. You don't know a single person there. It's so overwhelming, like the social side, the academic side, everything, even the financial side, mm-hmm. knowing how to budget yourself, knowing how to spend money. Like, it's so difficult and you've not been taught. Mm-hmm. And like everyone always says, imagine like A-levels, you're putting your hand up to go to the toilet, and a couple months later, you're in charge of like what, 5k, 9k, paying your student accom, paying your rent, cooking your own meals. Never done that in my life before.
Mm.
Like, it's just, the jump is crazy. You literally become an adult in like a couple months. You just become an adult, but you've never ever been treated like an adult before in your life. So it's just, the jump is insane. Like, it's so difficult, and no one ever speaks about it.
Mm.
Like, first term, a mess. Like, at least now I'm going back next time having like an idea of what it is I need to do, probably because I don't want to be in like Easter term catching up on this many lectures again in my life.
Mm.
Oh my goodness. But yeah, just, it's just crazy transforming everything you know in an instant, and just having so many aspects of your life merge into one, and you just, even like finding who you are, adulting, you know, big milestones in your life, work experience, oh my goodness, I can go on for ages.
Mm.
It's so different. Yeah. Like, it's crazy.
Okay, we're coming to an end soon, so I'm just going to ask you rapid questions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what was the funniest thing that happened to you in Cambridge?
Funniest?
Mm. It's subjective, so it doesn't have to be.
I'm trying to think. You guys can go first.
I mean, we didn't go Cambridge.
I mean, we went for a day trip.
Yeah, when you went for your day trip,
okay.
What's the funniest thing then? I can think while you guys are talking.
There must have been at least like four.
Yeah.
Four weird things that happened. Damn. And that was just like within like 7 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah, God forbid. Okay, maybe the first one I would say was like when we tried to go punting.
Oh.
And then, we'll say like this guy was trying to rip us off.
How much did you pay?
Luckily, I did my research.
Yeah.
Like a few days before, and then like these people like he tried to charge us like 75 each, and then I was like no, like we're gonna pay 30 or something like that, and then he was like no, but like this, like they require this, and I was like no. We need someone else, and then like we left and then came back a few hours later, and then we spoke to another guy.
He was a gentleman.
Yeah. Yes. And then I was like, listen, your friend tried to mug us off, so like please reduce your price. And then he was like, okay, we'll do this. And I was like 35, and he was like no, 40. And I was like no, like make it 30, lower. Yeah. I kept on haggling.
We haggled, yeah.
And then like I think we decided on like 35
for both.
Yeah.
Mm.
No, we split it.
So we said, split it. No, it wasn't 75. It was, the guy said 75 together, so he wanted 35 each. But then we ended up getting it down to 35, so 17 each.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
We split 35, and yeah, it was good. And then another one was, what was it? I don't know, I think it was like these two girls on our boat. And then we were talking to, I don't know, like...
First of all, the impression I got, they were, you know, with Adam people? Gosh. Guys... You can never tell their age. I'm just going to say, if somebody, I'm going to keep it at that. This,
keep it safe.
One day I hope to get into the workforce and I don't want this to come back to me.
Yeah.
No, so one of them, I always thought that was her mum and a daughter. Anyways, homegirl, the mum, she was looking at me like I was a shoe under her feet. And like when we get talking, I had to stunt on her and say, babes,
pack it up. You don't know me.
They
tend to like one up us.
Really? And I was like, babes, you're a country girl. You don't know us. You don't know what we've been.
They just like, they kept asking like invasive questions.
Invasive culture. I feel like Adan culture, you know what they're like? I'm not even going to lie to us. There's certain things we keep
talking about. It's definitely like some sort of white complex thing where they want us to feel inferior.
But babe, they were the ones, it's so funny, ironic, because by the end of the conversation, they were the inferior ones.
Mm.
Because they get away.
I love that.
I have to humble you respectfully, you know? But I think she kept on looking at me. Like, she kept on looking at me, and I was just thinking, is there something wrong with me? Why is this? Thinking, be looking at me.
Anyways,
we didn't talk, and then the other girl was the one that struck up a conversation, and then we just talked a bit. I really liked the one opposite me, because the other one, I just feel like with me, first impression counts. If I don't like your first impression, I don't like you. Period.
Me, not so much. Like I like to give people
a chance,
you know, to open up and like unravel themselves, because I know how hard it is to like open
up.
Yeah. So
I just feel like I got that vibe from her. But she, alhamdulillah, she was sweet. Just the other girls a lot more open. Mm-hmm. And then they asked a really invasive country. Like, 100%. Oh, and then I think they asked what uni to go. And then we asked them and then they didn't go uni. But then they kept on just asking us very like weird questions. Ooh. Just trying to see, where have you been? Where have you did this? Yeah. Oh, we live here. And
it's like, do you go Cambridge often?
No,
like, we told them it's just like a day trip.
A day trip.
But anyways, like... Yeah. Honestly, it was a nice experience, but I just didn't like the standoffish vibe, and I felt like were trying to project their superiority.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, like, I'm sure they're two lovely girls, so...
Mm. No, but you actually do get that a lot at Cambridge.
Mm.
Like, I remember one of my first days there, I was in a group of, like, these girls, and then they were each, like, asking questions, like, oh, what hobby do you do? What sport do you do?
Mm.
And, like, I'm here, they're like, what hobbies do you do? I'm like, oh, I don't really have a hobby. And one's like, yeah, I'm a violinist player. One's like, yeah, like, I'm a really professional rock climber. The next is like, yeah, I'm a swimmer. One does lacrosse. And I'm like, you guys are asking me this just to say what you do.
Exactly.
Like, come on. Yeah. Like, you don't care what I do.
Mm.
It's literally a big thing because they expect, like, if you go there, if you're in Cambridge, you're, like, talented.
Like, well-bred, like,
yeah,
quote-unquote.
Yeah, like, literally. And if you're not, they expect you to feel bad for it. But, like, I don't really care. At the end of the day, we're in the same place. Yeah. Like, I don't give a shit.
Have you seen the film The Right Club?
No, I've not. But well, I've heard of it.
Because I feel like you will relate to it a lot. So, shall I tell you what it's about? No, I really don't want to spoil it for you, but basically, it's about, like, it's the Riot Club. It's like a, you know, old institution where, you know, like a society, a secret society in Oxford. And then it's a boys' club. And then, like, one of the guys in the club is dating a girl from, like, not a scholarship, but, like, who went to, like, a normal school, like, a normal background like us. And then, like, his friends will make fun of it. That's just, like, one aspect of the film. Like, the stuff that they do in The Riot Club is insane. Please watch it, guys. It's a good film.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to watch it. Definitely.
Yeah.
Okay,
the next question is, what was, like, your favourite experience?
At the university?
Mm-hmm. Like, most, I don't know, like, warmest?
I think... My favourite experience is, so it kind of goes back, so one night I needed makeup wipes and I didn't have any, and like, if you're in Cambridge, everything closes at 8 p.m, so if you don't have makeup wipes, you don't have makeup wipes, period, like, you just don't have any. So, like, there's, like, a group chat with everyone in the college, and, like, I don't really know anyone at this point, so I messaged a group chat, and I'm like, does anyone have any makeup wipes? And some girl's like, yeah, I do, I've never met her before, she's like, come to my room. I go to her room, and she's like, do you want to explore Cambridge tomorrow? And I was like, okay. So the next day we went out together. And if you're in Cambridge, have you been to the Fitzwilliam Museum?
No.
It is stunning. Like, they have a gold room where it looks like an opera house.
I saw it on your Instagram. Yeah. I was stalking you. I love it. I should like it. I think I like it.
It's stunning. So, like, I went there and we just went to all of the historic sites in Cambridge. Like, we went punting. We went, like, have you been to Clare Bridge? Like Clare College, like they have like a bridge.
Yeah, we definitely passed the bridge. Yeah.
We went to like King's Chapel.
Yeah, we went there too.
Yeah, like we just explored the whole city in like a day, and it was such a nice experience. Like, it was just good vibes, and like, we're friends now, and like, it was just like my most memorable day because we went everywhere. Have you been Fitzbillies?
No, what's that?
It was like a really popular like cafe in Cambridge. It's like three, and all the students eat there. I went there, we went to literally, like, all the popular cafes, like, we got lunch, and we got dinner, and it was, like, really, really nice. So that's literally one of my best experiences.
Love that. Shout out to that girl.
You might have to do an itinerary literally. For us, because...
No, I actually will. Yeah. If you go, I'll be your tour guide.
I will come back.
I know the good places, trust me.
Yeah, okay. Any questions?
What would be your advice to, like, someone... Like, I think you talked a bit about your experience, you know, being at Cambridge. What would be your advice to someone that wants to apply to, like, Cambridge or Oxford, and, like, yeah, they're just scared of, like, that jump, I guess. And also just, as you said, maybe being a fish out of water.
Honestly, my advice is, like, if I'm there, you can be there, trust me. Because, like,
It's okay.
I'm a really, like, anxious person, I'm really shy, and I don't like standing out. So the fact that, like, I'm fine with it just shows that you'll kind of be fine with it as well.
Mm.
And, like, honestly, you're always... going, like, what I was saying, like, the more I realize I don't want to stand out, like, the contrast is I want to stand in, and I just have to do you really want to stand in? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, do you really just want to be, like, have a, like, just blend in, if that kind of makes sense. And you realise you don't really want to blend in, then it's, like, okay to stand out. It's never really making, like, much sense.
No, you
won't. But honestly, like, just go for it. And, like, you'll meet your people. I'm not saying that everyone's just, like, predominantly white. Well, they are. But there are so many ways you can meet people that you like. There's some sort... There's a society for every single ethnicity. There's an African Caribbean society. If it's not society, you literally can start it up. Like, the university gives you funding to do it. Mm. There are so many chances and ways you can meet people that kind of get you. Mm. And if you're, like, really, really worried about it, this is kind of, like, more technical. But each university releases, like, they kind of release the list of students there. So, like, they release their percentage of state school, mm. and they release the percentage of ethnicities. So if it's something you're really, really worried about, look for a college that is predominantly state school, or look for a college that predominantly accepts more, like, ethnic people. Because honestly, like, how comfortable you are matters. Like, it's crucial in, like, your performance as well. Because if you're not happy, you're not going to do well. So literally look at the technical bit and just realise that the social bit is always going to be there. You just kind of have to, like, make more of an effort to do so. But there's literally no harm in trying. And, like, if you are there, like, you're going to have a good experience regardless, honestly. Like, it'll be good.
I love that.
Love that advice, yeah. I mean, that concludes today's episode. Guys, thanks so much for listening. Thank you, Hannah, for coming on.
Okay. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
We kept having, like, conversations in and out of the recording, but honestly, it was so nice, like learning meeting more about you. Cambridge, also, mm. like, the hotspot. So, yeah, we're definitely going to take you up on that offer.
Yeah.
Guys, thank you very much for listening. As always, please subscribe, share this if you think that a friend will resonate with this. And as always, stay blessed.